It's episode 11, #011 of the Back to Front show. Back on track this week, Kieran. How are you?
Yes. Good, thank you. How are you?
Not too bad. Interesting week or no?
Yeah. Good week. All sorts going on. New website launched.
What, your own?
Yes.
This is one where you decided to include a 4,000 pixel wide picture of yourself on the homepage.
It is actually still there. It was a temporary thing, and then now I have put it live with that. Yes, I need to change that quite urgently.
Vanity does always get the best of us, I do find.
Yeah, well, I was trying to, you know, make sure that anybody on any screen size could still see my face.
So it's a truly responsive image, whether you have a 100 pixel wide screen or a 5,000 pixel screen.
Well, no, it's not. It has a max width, so.
Oh, it does?
Yeah.
You've set a max width on yourself.
On myself, yeah.
Max width, 36 inches. excellent. So what made you do a new site?
Just trying to focus more on consultancy and strategy and stuff and not code.
I see. But keeping your hand in at the code, as all good web professionals should, right?
I do, yes. To bring up a topic
for later, yes. I guess we should kick off with the big news.
Mm-hmm.
The winner of my lunchbox.
Oh, goodness, yes.
Yes, we were, well, it would be remiss of me to say inundated with entries, but we had some.
We did.
We had some. And, I don't know. People spending too much time in front of computer screens, or maybe the perspective was a bit skew on that picture, or I'm really short, or I
think you're really short.
Yeah, I'm just, it's all that talk of the Tom Cruise box.
That's true.
It's clearly affected people's perceptions of my height. Damien Harrington, 12 inches.
Yeah.
Question mark. Well, sadly, no.
No, not quite.
You are not, 5'8", and I'm not 4'8", which would make me shorter than Prince and Kylie, I think. Jono Witz, we like Jono. He gave us a great review on iTunes.
Yes.
2.74 inches, very specific.
Yeah, very specific.
Very specific. Almost to the point where you think he's got some insider knowledge.
Yes, though he doesn't.
Though he doesn't.
Which I hasten to add.
And he does want to win that lunchbox, but unfortunately on this occasion, although I may have the opportunity to pick up another one before the end of the year, so you never know, we could rerun the competition. Sadly, on this occasion, he didn't win. Moving down. Craig Lockwood, 8 inches, ooh.
Well, that's a sit all, doesn't it?
Craig, if you're listening, you should get a prize for the ooh, but... considering we do know you, we almost have to discount you on that basis, but also on the basis that it's actually incorrect.
Dramatically so.
But we do have a winner. It's Mr. James Hollingworth.
James Hollingworth.
His answer was 3 inches, which equates to 22 pixels.
Yes. I think there was some sort of strategy involved there. I think he has actually measured it in Photoshop and then tried to work out pixel to inch ratio or something.
Pixel to inch ratio. Yeah, there's definitely an algorithm, probably, a lot of...
probably a lot of working out on the back of a napkin going on.
Napkin, probably maybe built an app. Maybe there's an iPhone thing. I don't know.
Maybe.
Either way, James, you are the winner.
Congratulations to James.
Congratulations. You'll be getting your... my lunchbox. We didn't mention that actually there's some contents in there as well. Do you think we would have got more entrance if I'd mentioned?
Is there a flask included?
There is a thermos type thing.
This dude is so much bigger.
It could have been like 12 inches.
We haven't actually told them the real difference. James was the closest, wasn't
James he? Was the closest. It wasn't correct. 3 inches is not correct. It's actually 5 inches.
It is, yes.
5 inches. Is the height delta between my good self and you.
Thus the need for the box.
Thus the need for the box, a 5-inch box. Mm-hmm. Or railway sleepers. But anyway, James, we will be getting in touch with you and to discuss delivery of the lunchbox. And I think we should demand, I'm going to go as far as say demand a photo in the workplace with the lunchbox for the blog.
I think that's fair.
For the blog, we don't have a blog. For the site.
And if he doesn't have a workplace, then just in his living room.
Yeah, that's absolutely fine. But I think, maybe with the whole team, if you're in a big company behind you, sort of your thumbs up with the
corporate photo.
Corporate photo with the lunchbox. But yes, congratulations, James. As I say, we will be in touch, and I hope you find good use for the lunchbox. Mm-hmm. Anyway, on with the show. Big news. It was your turn to talk about yourself last week. I'm just going to throw in a little mention about something I've been involved in. Actually, you've been involved in it too.
I have.
Yes, print is not dead. Long live print. A new publication called Digest that Mr. Edit J. Socks, I keep saying Socks, it's obviously Stocks, myself and 20 other contributors have been putting together over the last 6 months called 20? Digest.
I didn't know that.
Wow. Yeah, 22 contributors in total.
Blimey.
Of which you are one.
Yeah.
Yeah, new publication. It's really, it's big, actually.
I would go as far as say it is beautiful.
It is beautiful.
It is a beautiful publication.
Mr. Stocks has done an amazing job on the layouts and the spreads and the design and everything.
Who did the photography? The photography is very good.
A bunch of different people, actually. We've commissioned all the creative, as it's called, is original. So from illustrations to photography. Mm-hmm. To all the words, there's nothing stock about it apart from the design, which is Stock's design. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's an A3 large format magazine, mm-hmm. Coming out on August the 14th, available from viewportindustries.com/digest. But yeah, we're really excited about it. It's a bit of a departure for us. So,
it's very different.
Very different. We have to see how it goes in terms of whether people actually like it. So,
what's the pitch exactly? The pitch is stuff aimed at web professionals, but not webby, geeky content. Yes,
yeah,
it's lifestyle content.
More lifestyle. This term that's bandied about, but yeah, it's kind of a reminder that there's plenty of other stuff going on in the world
apart from pixels and jQuery.
But not just for web professionals, really, to creative people. Anyone in this sort of creative industry, is this food, drink, travel, sort of interesting stuff, a bit of film.
Nice. Yeah, a bit of film. So I think someone wrote an article about that.
Yeah, design, all that kind of stuff. I think there's 19 original articles in there, all with photography and illustration and stuff, and some really interesting stuff. So hopefully people will be interested. And it's out on August the 14th. So that's my blatant plug. But if you can't plug your own stuff on your own podcast.
This is true. And where's it available from, Kim?
Well, it will be available online. As I said earlier, I shall repeat it. viewportindustries.com/digest.
Good.
But if anyone has any inclination to buy it, we'd be very grateful, of course. But it's a good read, actually. Good read. Dodgy article on film, but that aside, it's all good. No, your spreads, is that your spreads? Your spreads?
Spread?
Is actually, it's one of the sort of really striking ones in the magazine. So
I think mainly aided by incredible artwork from top-rate artists all around the world rather than my copy.
Yeah, you don't want to give it away too much. No. But if people follow Elliot on Dribbble, they might have seen it anyway, but there you go.
Of course, yeah.
But yeah, so end of plug, or if I was geeky enough, slash plug or whatever people do.
Right.
But yeah, so on with the news. Shall I start? Yes, why don't
you start? Yeah.
So I've been listening to a lot more podcasts recently. Once you're into doing your own one, I think it's polite to listen to others. I did before anyway, but since having the office in town, I've done a lot more walking, so had a lot more time in many ways to check out some of the other podcasts out there. One I really enjoy is the Freelance Web. Have you listened to that?
I haven't, actually.
No, it's
not contributed to the conversation at all.
No, Sean Johnson. It's really good, actually. Mm-hmm. Good short burst, sort of 25 minutes, talking about freelancing, which is ironic considering I don't really do much freelancing, but still it's a really good listen. Cool. The Hired podcast by Cameron Marl as well.
Yeah.
Which is really good. And that's one I wanted to highlight today because they reached episode 10 as well.
Have they?
Yeah. They deviated slightly from their normal conversation. They have a guest each week, and the premise is from one of the companies that is hiring through Authentic Jobs.
I see. Yeah.
But they deviated for episode 10 and did mm-hmm. a guide to podcasting where they got Sarah Parmenter and Josh long, and the gentleman's name, who I've forgotten from Thoughtbot, which is terribly remiss of me. Let me see if I can find it. But yeah, it was a guide to podcasting. So, or Ben Orenstein, which apologies if
Ben Orenstein, yeah,
which does the Giant Robots Smashing into Other Giant Robots podcast, which is primarily a it's an in-house podcast for Thoughtbot.
Right. Okay.
So they don't seek any commercial, like, sponsorship or anything like that. It's a way of advertising their business, really.
Yeah.
But they talked all everything from how to get guests to the equipment they use. The Blue Yeti was mentioned, but no was one. It? Only in the context of the guys from Thoughtbot, they send out a Blue Yeti to their guests.
That's not a bad idea, actually.
Yeah. So hopefully they send it back. Maybe they send a, you know, packaging to return.
Standard addressed envelope.
Yeah, exactly. But it does appear that the Rode podcaster is the one of choice.
Is it?
Yeah.
I think it's the most hipster mic available.
It's hipster mic. You can get the stand, you can get the sort of, what do they call that thing where you can, like, move it in and out, and like a little arm thing.
Well, the arm,
desk arm.
Pop
and
filter, all that stuff.
Yeah, Sazzy has the pop filter. Apparently, right. She's very poppy.
Makes sense.
Which we can all testify to, I'm sure. But yeah, there was some other software highlighted in the guide as well. Something called Sound Studio and Hindenburg Systems. They produce something where it allows you to sort of piece together all the different audio tracks.
Oh,
so
I see.
If you've got, like, you were supplying me your MP3 and I had one and then we had a guest, you can sort of marry them all up. And,
oh, nice.
But yeah, so, Cameron was saying that they spend like hours lining all the audio up. I mean, he's got a professional setup there, and wow. And Josh has built himself a box.
A box.
Yeah, you've got to listen to it just to hear Josh talk about his box.
Is this some sort of recording booth?
Yeah, he's built himself a recording booth. Apparently, he's got a separate section in his new office now. That's mm-hmm. custom. But before that, he literally built himself a box that he kind of put over his head that encased.
Oh, nice.
His computer and mic and everything, just to sort of dampen down the sound.
Right, so they don't get the street noise or the ambulance going past or whatever.
The boy races, yeah. So I think
the boy races.
We need to step up the dedication.
I think we do. Maybe we get egg cartons on the wall.
If people are building boxes, and
yeah,
you know,
we need to up our game.
We're not
a
really
of
doing
blue
anything.
Blue Yetis, you know.
Yeah, but yeah, really interesting. And just talked about how they get guests and how. Different ways of approaching sort of well-known people in the industry if you want to interview them, that kind of thing. It's definitely worth a listen. So
nice.
That's
check it out.
hired.fm/episode/10.
Cool.
And the second one I've actually stolen from you, although I should have, you know, again, should have had it in there, definitely. It's new from Mr. Kinnish.
Mr. Kinnish.
Mr. Kinnish and Mr. Nelson. Quickcast.io. I never know what the IO is. What domain is that?
Quickcast.io?
No, IO, is it in, what's it in, what's the domain, IO? I never know.
Oh, it is Indian Ocean or something.
Indian Ocean. Oh, that's very good. But yeah, these are the team behind Mixture, my favourite front-end development tool, TM. And yeah, essentially it's a way of recording up to, and hosting, I should say, 3-minute screencasts.
Yeah, I think it's very, very nice, this. I was talking to Mr. Kinnish last night, and
he gets around, doesn't he?
He does, yeah.
He talks to everyone all the time.
Yeah, I don't know how he builds these things.
Schmoozer.
Yeah, so he was talking to me last night, and I was quite amazed that, first of all, he'd been able to secure the quick.as.
I know. The short domain, yeah, very cool.
Which is very cool. And secondly, I was amazed that he's actually hosting these videos. So this, you know, I thought this was going to be, it spits out a video for you to upload to YouTube, or maybe it, you know, it takes your YouTube credentials or something, or your Vimeo credentials and uploads it for you. But, you know, he's actually hosting them, and he's made a lovely little player for it and everything, and he was talking to you about the encoding and stuff, you know, how they're encoding it with Amazon Elastic Encoder.
I know he does. He does have this habit of making everything sound so simple.
Yes.
You go, oh yeah, of course, yeah. Amazon encoder, yeah. No problem at all. You use a bit of backbone, bit of Node, throw that in the mix, whiz it all up.
Saying it's his first happy experience with Node, actually.
Oh really?
First time he'd really got to grips with it and likes it.
I think it's since he's grown the mustache and waxed it. He's kind of got more into it.
Really?
Yeah. They're big into wax mustaches in Shropshire.
Are they?
I believe so.
I thought it was all hoppy and stuff around there.
Don't know. He has got the hipster glasses, a bit like me, though, the last time I saw him. I think he's learning. He's learning.
Slowly moving in that direction.
I think so. It's a matter of time.
I thought the background image on the quick cast, I know it's random, but one of them's really retro. It's this sort of desktop with books on it and stuff. And I was just saying to him, there's an iPod mini being advertised on the back of one of the...
There is. It's brilliant. I've just found that one.
Yeah. So there's a slightly retro image he's using there, which is quite cool.
It's kind of worrying that there's also a book for PHP 5 on the same one, which makes you realise how old PHP 5
is. It does. I'm trying to work out what the other books are, actually. It's a whole bunch of stuff by
JavaScript.
O'Reilly, yeah. Anyway, so yeah, it's really nice, but it basically allows you to record a 3-minute screencast. Mac and iOS, is that right?
It just says Mac OS X 10.7 Plus here.
I think there's an iOS something in the works, maybe. Maybe I'm wrong. Probably just leaked some, you know, really sensitive information there, but maybe not.
So
it's really nice, and it just simply allows you to demonstrate something to someone. And I often do a little screencast to show a client what I've been building, or to show someone how to do something. And this is just sort of, you know, the ultimate tool for that, really. And it also allows you to turn on your front-facing camera on your Mac and talk to them as you do it.
So that's really nice.
In video face, as it were.
The fact that you've deemed it the ultimate tool as well.
I think it is the ultimate tool, yeah. I think
it's the ultimate tool. It's very good. Yeah, no, they actually announced this to sort of outside their inner circle at CompShop, and which was like less than a month ago. They've really thrown this out there and got it done really quickly. But, you know, a lot of polish on it as well. It's a really, really nice thing. And that's quickcast.io. Go check it out and upload your 3-minute videos. Moving on, you've got a couple of crackers this week, actually. Actually, you had about 7, as always, but we've managed to trim them to maybe 3, depending on how long we talk about the first one. But why don't you kick off with a small yet interesting topic?
Yeah, this certainly isn't a small topic, actually. This is Paul Boag.
Mr. Boag.
Mr. Boag World. Who, incidentally, I really like the fact that he audio records his blog posts, but that's an aside.
Really? Doesn't Fred Wilson do that too?
Well, he doesn't. He uses a service. Paul actually records them.
Oh, so Fred's not actually speaking them. He outsources that.
He outsources the...
What a brilliant idea. You could pick your voice. You could, you know,
it's
maybe...
It's called something. What's that? That's...
Could you pick accent? Like, you know, I would like broad Bristol, or, you know, or like South London.
Hang on a second. I go into AVC. Let's see what it is that loads. Oh, not all of them have them. Hang on a second. Here we go. Voice Bunny is the service that does this. Get a human professional voice. Voiceovers on demand.
Ooh.
Tap the crowd of thousands of actors working from pro studios.
Interesting.
Anyway, so that's what Mr. Wilson does. But what Paul Boag does is he just records it himself, which is actually quite nice. But in this particular post, to get back on topic, he says, should web professionals all be able to code?
Oh,
now this is a conversation I think I might have been having since about 1998.
Probably.
And as Paul points out in the post, this is a topic that obviously divides people. And it also... it has generally been, should designers be able to code as opposed to just all web professionals? But what he's asking here is, should project managers, you know, user experience people, that kind of thing, be able to code as well, or at least have at least a basic coding skills, right? So an understanding of basic coding skills. And he asks, do you agree? If so, why? And if not, what is your reasoning? Let us know in the comments, blah, 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 blah. And he says, no fence sitting, basically. You need to be for it or against it. And this is all for his podcast, which I'm not sure when he's recording it. But so he does the Bagwell podcast, and this is the topic for the next show.
Interesting, interesting. What's no fence sitting, Kira? What do you think?
No fence sitting. I think that everyone involved in the production of a web app should understand markup and CSS.
I agree. I think to a certain degree.
Obviously, to a certain level. I'm not saying that they need to be able to build the app itself, you know, build the front end, but I think that just to understand how markup works and how the site's styled and all those things are important, and to have some understanding of, you know, back-end infrastructure and stuff would be useful as well, I think.
I think, you know, a lot of times this gets bandied about. You hear that, well, do architects know how to build houses, and, you know, have they ever, you know, built a wall, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. No, but I think they understand that a brick goes next to another brick with cement and so forth. And if you have no concept of the basic building blocks of the industry that we work in, I can't imagine how difficult that would make your life. So I don't think it's a, you know, deem that everyone should be able to code, but I question how people can actually work in the industry if they don't have a concept.
I agree.
Or at least have played around with the technologies. Now, you know, I couldn't build, unlike you, I can't necessarily bring up, you know, a server farm of LAMP servers in like 12 minutes, but I can do it, and I've worked through it, and I'm, you know, by no means proficient, but excuse me. Sure. You know, it, without an understanding of front end and back end and how the two talk to each other and some of the technologies, at least in principle, mm-hmm. and what HTML and CSS and JavaScript is and how they work, I would struggle to understand how you'd be as good a professional in the industry as you can. So it's not me thinking everyone should. If you flip it on its head and say, well, would it make you better at your job to understand it? Then I think then the answer would be yes.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think the argument, do architects know how to build houses? You know, the answer to that is yes, they do. You know, they don't necessarily go out there and get dirty, and they don't necessarily know exactly how to wire the electrics and all those things. But, you know, the amount of engineering required by an architecture degree is pretty high.
Yeah.
And understand how loads work and how, you know, different materials respond and all those things. So if you're using that analogy, then I always find that really, you know, I also think the person who brings that up, and they, you know, not just you, people, other people have said that to me, you know, well, can architects build houses? You know, they're sort of proving my point. Because yes, they can. And I think there should be a similar level of knowledge required to work and design in the web industry, or to project manage in the web industry, as an architect does about building houses. You know, that should be shows the level at which they should understand it. It should be, you know, conceptually, theoretically, they understand it.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think so. We're not sitting on the fence, and we're saying a firm yes.
So, Paul, yes.
Yes, Paul. Yes, Paul.
Yes, Paul. anyway, on to my next.
Yeah.
New story. This is from Mr. Joe.
Mr. Joe Leach.
At CX Partners. And I really like some of the stuff they do, actually, CX Partners. And there's a really nice blog post by a chap named Luke Jones. Luke Jones at CX Partners. It's on the CX Partners blog. Obviously, we'll link to it. And it's called Appropriate Design. Now, I'm not a designer.
I think your new website would prove otherwise.
Not designed by me.
Okay. You're not a designer.
No, I'm not a designer. But, you know, I think that... So some people from design circles may say to me, oh, this is all old hat or something. But, you know, reading this, it made a lot of sense to me. Because I often sit in meetings with clients, and I sit in even meetings about stuff that I want to build myself or that I'm working with other people on personally. And, you know, the process of design is very often not informed by the product itself. And that has always frustrated me. So it doesn't seem that, you know, design is led by the product. It seems that design is led by latest trends in design.
Yeah, fair comment.
So this article is about appropriate design. You know, effectively talking about the sort of realistic, quote unquote, design, pseudo realistic designs. Is it called skeuomorphic or something?
Yeah.
which is the same as the style of, you know, say iOS 6 with the notepad that has a leather bound bit on it and a ripped page at the bottom and that kind of stuff.
Never liked that personally, but
no, I don't like it either, but it's a sort of, you know, pretend it's a real object type thing versus flat design. Now these aren't necessarily opposites, they're just two extreme, you know, examples of design. And what this guy's saying is, you know, there was a massive trend towards everything looking realistic or sort of stylized realistic, and now there's a massive trend towards flat. But really what they try and advocate at CX Partners is appropriate design, where the design is led by the product itself. And the example he gives is a map. So, for example, when they're designing an application with a map in it, the map is by, you know, convention flat. There's very little gradients in it. You know, it's flat colors. So roads are one color, you know, rivers are another color, etc. And therefore, if they made the interface also flat, it hinders the user experience.
Right.
So what he's saying is that, you know, yes, the current trend is towards flat and their client wanted flat in this case, but really if they then deliver flat, it's inappropriate for the application. So they have to add texture, etc., to make the interface stand out from the, or the interface layer, shall we call it, stand out from the map.
Hmm, interesting.
So anyway, it's a good read, and I just think that they're not necessarily criticizing designers for following trends, because that's natural. You know, we all do it in various ways, but it's an interesting take on the design problem, and not necessarily go, you know, the client says, I want flat, not necessarily giving it to them.
Yeah, I think it's summed up in the last paragraph really well, where it says, following a trend might mean having a beautiful website, but it may not work for you. Appropriate design, thus starting a new trend here, is designing something suitable, meaningful, beautiful, and functional, something that works for many reasons. I think, yeah, that's a great summary.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
A great summary. Yeah, no, it's, that's, what's it called? Appropriate Design on CX Partners blog, which is cxpartners.co.uk/cxblog/appropriate-design. Go check it out, and we'll, of course, link that up in the show notes.
Indeed.
Kieran, I've, I think we've actually made a mistake, you know.
Have we?
I've just been looking through the mentions, and we did have a guess at 6.5 inches that we both missed.
We haven't.
Yeah, Mr. @Matt_Wilmot. If he's listening to this, he's probably screaming at us.
Have we missed an entry?
We've missed an entry, and you know, neither of us have time to re-record and do. But we have to make this right. We have to make it right.
James Hollingworth is now screaming at his
James, you're as they used to say on Bullseye, your lunchbox is safe, but we're gonna have to get another one for Matt.
Yes, I think that's fair.
So Matt, don't worry, I will be getting one at the end of the month for you, and we'll send it across to where are you based in Hertfordshire.
Sure,
I will make sure. So that will be with you in early September.
Our apologies, Matt. James.
Yeah, and James. So we've ended up giving away a lunchbox we don't have.
Well, I'm sure you can tap up Jeffrey.
I'll speak to Jay-Z and see if I can get another one. but so well done, James, for getting not the closest answer, but still winning. And Matt, our undue apologies.
Well, that's professional.
Yeah, again, you know, as I say, mm-hmm. we're up in the stakes, and you know, we're trying to get with the professionalism. Next time, maybe we'll try and
read the Twitter feed better.
Yeah, so Matt, or if you'd like, I do have a big box of swag. Maybe we could connect on Twitter and I could send you something in place, although you do say old style lunchboxes are amazing, so I'm not sure I could
bend his arm, really.
Bend his arm, but I will try. I will try.
You do
But anyway, on that bombshell, we should move on to our discussion topic.
Indeed.
We kind of banded a few ideas around, most of which met with the comment of lots of Zeds from you, but this one didn't.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Yeah. You know, hurt my feelings. I spent a lot of time
They were boring here.
All right.
Okay, yeah.
Just because they weren't about dogs. but we've both been sort of discussing this over time, and this notion that comments on websites, blogs, whatever, are kind of dead. They've kind of passé.
Yeah.
And so, and you know, both been sort of tinkering around with our own sites. And did you end up putting comments back on your blog or no?
No, there's no comments on my blog, no.
So I guess the question is, what's the current value? Because I used to find a lot of value in comments. But we are talking sort of, you know, 7, 8, 9 years ago. And are comments dead? What's the value of online commentary? And if they are, where's the discussion? Is it just Twitter? I mean, you know, we talk about being social all the time, but you know, what is the value? I mean, the man v raccoon YouTube video. I know, of course, YouTube is not the best example by any stretch, but no. I mean, it has some like 50,000 comments. I mean, where does the value? Well, there's no value in that. You can't engage. I mean, even a blog post that still permits comments and has like maybe 20 or 30, it can get a bit silly. But what are your thoughts in general on you know, blogging was that big thing sort of 8, 9 years ago. It was the way we all kept in touch before things like Twitter. But it also added value, you know, people chiming in a nice, polite way. But that all seems to have changed. What do you think?
I think that it really depends on the site. I think that it depends on your purpose. I think there's obviously a secondary element here about comments creating more traffic. You know, that's sort of well documented, the idea that someone comments and they share it because they've commented, because they've contributed something that they think is valuable, and then their friends comment, and you know, that's how you know create more traction. So I think that's a side issue, because I think that does work. It's, you know, it's proven to work. But what I think is probably the case is that is the likelihood of that creating traction is diminishing, because people don't see value in comments. You know, for example, I mean, you know, we all end up on some news article on The Guardian or, you know, The Sun or, you know, God forbid, the Daily Mail. And there's an article which is obviously going to polarize people. And you go down to the comments section, and as you say, there's sort of 150,000 comments or something. And it's all, you know, a black and white argument, black, white, all the way down.
It's kind of like reviews on things like TripAdvisor.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
If you ever use that.
Tomatoes, for example, for film, you know, it's the same thing.
Yes, best hotel I've ever stayed in. And then there's a picture of a cockroach that they've obviously, you know, managed to find somewhere, and it gets a zero rating. So yeah, it's 2.5. Okay.
Or there's dust on top of the wardrobe. You know, what are you doing on top of the wardrobe?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, don't you always check that?
No, I don't think I've ever looked on top of a hotel wardrobe. Maybe I should in future.
Maybe you should. You know, run. Being 6'5", you'd be quite easy to reach up.
Tiptoes, look over.
Yeah.
No, but I think that, you know, for example, my site, I found that comments were next to pointless, simply because I either got, you know, me too type comments.
Plus one.
Yeah, plus one.
First.
Or I got, you know, some sort of vicious comment about disagreeing with me that was anonymous. And I just didn't find any use in that. You know, if I replied, the person rarely replied back, and then there's this vicious thing written on my site that I don't really, you know, want there. Then do you delete the comment? If you delete the comment, then the person, you know, thinks, you know, they've won or what. I just think that it wasn't helpful for me. Like I write articles about tech and film and that kind of thing. And just like lots of articles, if you've got an opinion, they tend to polarize people.
You know,
people just like Paul's post, he doesn't want fence sitters. I don't think you actually get any fence sitters. Because I think it is one of those things where people either think, yes, you definitely need to code, or no, you don't. So I just started to find them unhelpful. And on the last iteration of my site, I simply said, if you would like to comment on this post, please do so on Twitter, and just literally created a link that popped up a Twitter, a tweet box, and they were allowed to, you know, to at me with a reference to the article. And that basically drew absolutely no comments, even though my previous blog had been having comments. So I think once they have to actually say it directly to you on a platform like Twitter, it changes it.
Right. So yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? So literally the There was zero commentary or just the odd?
There was the odd comment, but it was generally, people saying, you know, nice things, great, yeah, like, thanks, this is really useful or whatever. Not, none of the negative comments came through once it was actually, you know, you have to at me and say something about it.
Yeah, so, I mean, what, I guess, how do people discuss things now then? How do you get feedback on your articles, or how do you, or are you even seeking feedback? I mean,
I'm not really. That's the point. Yeah. You know? I mean, if someone genuinely has enough of an articulate argument or an interesting thing to say that they want to engage with me on Twitter, then that's fine. Or on any other medium, or email me. You know, there's loads of contact methods on my site. It's not like it's hard to contact me and have a discussion about something. The thing that I found unhelpful really was the open nature of the conversation. Mm. You know, the more voices does not lead to better conversation, as far as I'm concerned.
It was quite funny back when Elliot and I did the Insights tour back in 2000 and blimey, it's over 2 years ago, 2011.
God.
And we interviewed Jeremy Keith in Brighton.
And, oh yeah.
He's, you know, one of the most prolific bloggers. If you actually do the maths on how many blog posts he's had since he started his site, it's hundreds a year. But he does have the inbuilt facility to offer comments, but he rarely does. And that, I asked him why, and I said, why is it that you don't have comments? And his response was, it's the wrong question. The question is, why should I have comments? Mm-hmm. Which I thought was quite interesting. And he said on the odd occasion that he does open up comments, what he does, people can submit a comment. They don't necessarily see it straight away, because he feels that if you ever listen to this, Jeremy, and I've got this wrong, please do correct me, but that, you know, people react to the comments, so you get this flow that often then deviates from the original article. So if you're soliciting feedback, the feedback should in theory be about the conversation that you've proposed, not necessarily reacting to all the other comments in many ways. And then he said at the end, what he'll do is he'll take the comments and then make them live sort of at a certain point and close them, something like that, which I thought was quite an interesting way that it allowed people to feedback, but it wasn't necessarily a plus one, minus one, plus one, or you're crap, blah, 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 you know. And that was a different...
He's sort of referencing Godwin's law, isn't he? The idea that, you know, the longer that an article is online, it'll eventually turn out to be about, you know, someone will make a comment about Nazis or Hitler. It's that, you know, it deviates so far from the original article.
Yeah.
That, you know, the longer that the conversation goes on, the more likely the hood is someone calls someone a Nazi or says, you're Hitler.
Yeah. It's funny. I remember when, you know, blogs with the thing back, well, gosh, a long time ago, and it was like, oh wow, I can leave a comment, you know, I can actually start communicating with these people. Mm-hmm. But I've never ever been a voracious commenter on sites. I've often started comments and then deleted them, thinking, what am I actually adding to the conversation here? Yeah, what am I actually doing? You can come across as you just don't want to come across as just middle of the road. Do you know what I mean? It's like, what am I actually saying? I'm not really adding
to it. If you don't have a strong opinion on something, yeah, why comment?
But then again, when you write something and you open up comments, you don't necessarily want to spend your time then responding to sort of massively polarizing opinions. Mm-hmm. But
I also find it interesting as a, you know, as somebody who has articles and just as you do, have articles posted on other people's sites. So whether it be Smashing Magazine or Filmmaker Magazine or whatever, you know, I feel an obligation, and certainly you're encouraged to by these publications to dive into the comments.
Yeah, exactly.
And
yeah,
in fact, on is it IO9, the sci-fi site? I think there's actually, you know, there's a thing there that says, you know, author participating, that appears when the author starts to talk on the comments.
That's interesting, almost
as an encouragement, you know, that the author is participating. Therefore, this is worth, you know, adding your tuppence worth to. But being in that position, I often find it hard to dive into the comments, especially on something like Smashing Magazine, where typically articles get a lot of comments.
Yeah, it's one of the most prolific sites in terms of commentary, I think.
Yeah. And, you know, I can come back to an article, and if it's got 80 comments, I'm totally overwhelmed.
Oh, you know, I couldn't agree more. Yeah.
Do I sit there and do I go, cheers, Dave. Thanks, Barbara. You know, like, and and comment on that level. And I have done that before. I have sat there and felt, particularly when I first posted on the site, you feel this obligation to do that. And actually, you know, more recently, you just tend to pick out comments that are either particularly controversial, which is probably the wrong thing to be doing, or you pick out something that someone's actually made something interesting and said, you didn't think about this. It's something actually constructive.
Yeah. I think it's an interesting one, isn't it? Smashing, we've both worked, been lucky enough to work for them, and you were encouraged to. And I just think I'm not really sure what I'm adding here. You know, I've never been a big, big commenter. I guess, I don't know. I mean, if comments are dead, or, you know, they're just not as productive, or they're a Times app or whatever, where, how do we seek feedback on things that we do, or, you know, what's the purpose of something like Twitter? I mean, how do you use Twitter?
There's an important thing to remember here is that the idea that anybody can comment on a news story has only come around in the last, what, 5 to 8 years, something like that. I mean, you know, that this is a relatively new phenomenon. Before that, you know, there was no right to reply apart from writing a letter to your newspaper.
Sure.
And I think that, you know, we really need to ask ourselves, you know, what really, above increasing traffic, you know, over and above that, what is the value of comments on theguardian.com?
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's a really interesting question. Yeah, I don't know.
I think zero is the this is my opinion, is that, you know, the honest answer is zero. You know, they are there in order to create traffic, which is fine, but, you know, my brain now edits out the comment. Like, if I get as far down the article to the comments, I just don't see them. I go back up again. Like, I don't even, it's part of the page. It's almost like when you're using Google, you know, Gmail, the adverts in the sidebar, my brain doesn't even see them.
I think it's interesting with in relation to sort of, for want of a better expression, professional media, things like The Guardian, that you're reading the Guardian site, you kind of know, if you've been reading the Guardian for a while, what angles they're probably going to take, and and you're buying into that, aren't you, with by reading it. And so I kind of question the merit from their side beyond, as you say, the social engagement of the traffic increase, etc. What you know, the layperson, as it were, is actually going to bring to that. What's the motivation from the company's point of view to open that up? I mean, they're traditionally one of the most open brands, I guess, media brands, in terms of access to their stories and the APIs and some of the amazing work they've done there. But
yeah,
I guess that's an interesting one. I don't know.
I mean, I personally think that they're totally, you know, devoid of any value. And I think that there are sites where, particularly smaller sites, you know, I read an article by Elliot Kember, called Just, I don't know if you saw it, about the developer community, about how the developer community's likelihood to say, well, we've already got a library that does that, why do we need to bother with this when something new comes out? But as part of that, he talks about, you know, this thirst and desire online to always create more. So there's this idea that, you know, we need more content, we need more users, we need more page impressions, we need more comments. And he says that, you know, he says something at that point, you know, when does that more just lose, you know, start to lose value? Just, you know, is that the whole age of abundance argument? You know, we're living in an age of abundance. When do we just hit information overload and, you know, our brains go no more? You know, there's nothing, we can't take it anymore.
Yeah, I think I've kind of hit that with Twitter. I mean, I think, you know, it's a great service, but my engagement has gone down over time, really. I've just found it kind of eating more into my day and feeling less productive. And I think at least with comments, you'd have to go to the site. It was, you know, you didn't have an iPhone version of bringing you all the comments and that kind of quick fire, oh, I've got to reply to that because you're so wrong or whatever, you know.
With WordPress mobile app and all that stuff, now that's all being pushed directly to your phone. So if you're a blogger, you know, if you run /film or something, I wouldn't be at all surprised if those guys have the WordPress app on their phone and they're getting notifications saying, you got another comment. So they're being just as disturbed in their work by those comments as you are with Twitter.
Yeah, I guess that's you know, we say this every week. It's another conversational point, but it's true. And you know, time is getting on. Yes. but yeah, that constant flow of interruptions and how people deal with them. You know, I've read a lot recently about different ways that people approach their day, and you know, that religious approach to, you know, an hour of email in the morning, an hour in the afternoon. You still think that's 2 hours? That's a lot of email. But you know, and
but that's the nature of the beast now.
Yeah, and not getting into that kind of instant reply. This is this desire for everything has to be like boom, boom, boom. You know, and it's like I'm trying to get away from that. I'm too old for instant stuff. I think it's you know, it's time to kick back and take it a little bit slower.
Yeah.
But yeah, an interesting debate, really. I think you know, where is the conversation these days? I would say comment, but we don't have comments on the site, and but we do have Twitter, so you could let us know if you have any thoughts. Yeah, I was going to also sort of mention that I think it, you know, technically now adding comments to stuff is so easy with things like Discuss. I mean, it's you're seeing that everywhere. And if I were to add comments, I'd probably just go down that route, really, and just add in something like Discuss and just be done with it and see what happened. But I'm undecided, to be honest.
I think I would also go as far as to say that, you know, the funny thing I feel about it is I actually think that, and this is probably controversial, and I might cause a backlash here, but you know, I actually think the comments cheapen your site.
Ooh.
I think that's how far my feelings about comments have gone. You know, if I see someone's blog with comments on it, I feel the site sort of messy and dirty and a bit tabloid.
A wee bit tabloid. Needs a paywall. Mm-hmm. That's what it does.
Yeah. Everyone needs a paywall. Okay?
Should be £1 to comment. Imagine that. That'd be brilliant.
That'd be amazing. Then you'd have to have to be an impetus to, you know, really do that, wouldn't there?
You'd have to be, yeah, really, yeah.
There's a monetization option for Mr. Murdoch.
I remember, though, funny you should talk about that, when a friend of mine was at university got an internet connection, a dial-up one, and it was with a provider which I think ended up, it was either BT, but it was one of the ones, early ones, that ended up getting swallowed up by one of the many other providers.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think you were allowed something like 50 emails a month, and then it was 10p an email.
Brilliant.
It didn't last long, but can you imagine now?
I can't even imagine that now. I remember when I first started at EasyNet, or actually it was UK Online back then, there was a thing called FWAR, which was free unlimited email addressing. And this was new. So this was like wildcard@yourdomain.com. This was the idea that you don't have to pay for, you know, Dave@yourdomain or James@yourdomain. Each box, you could actually have FWAR, which is free unlimited email addresses.
Say that again.
FWAR.
Brilliant. Well, that's yeah. We should
last from the past. 1997, that was.
We should have a show, a special, a reminiscing the internet
on,
of your
on retro
retro
ISP offers,
and these old CDs stuck to the front of how your Internet Explorer used to come branded by your ISP.
Believe it or not, I used to compile those versions of Internet Explorer.
Yeah, there's a dark side to you that needs to be let free.
But I used to create ISP disks.
Yeah, which leads us in no way, shape or form to our end, finally.
No.
This from me this week.
Mm-hmm.
The intersection of dog or hound and technology, clearly not that active in the last week.
No.
What would that be? Dog tech? Hound? I don't know. We have to come up with a name.
It's got to be canine something, hasn't it?
So it's back to the usual topic of the fascinating topic of hipsters and hipsterlogo.com. Now, I'm sad to say that when I was thinking about logos the other day, this would have come in handy.
It would, actually.
You know, hipsterlogo.com. It's the definitive guide. I'll say definitive. I've never read another one, so. Or seen another one, so let's go with definitive. Okay. The Hipster Logo Design Guide, the definitive guide to creating your own hipster logo.
Choose a badge.
Yeah, so it's just if anyone's looking at hipsterlogo.com, have a look now. There's six steps to heaven, basically. Step one is to choose a badge. And you can have the simple circle, the seal of approval, or the merit badge. They're all.
And it
all
says at the top, the perfect shape for a patch stamp or temporary tattoo.
Yeah. Now, Kieran,
mm-hmm.
were you wearing a temporary tattoo yesterday?
I was sporting a Tatley yesterday, yes.
Yeah, you're so hipster.
I am, yeah.
Ridiculous.
It's sort of post-ironic ironic.
Who would give you such a thing?
I don't know. Some hipster who'd been to America and come back with a box of swag.
Lots of Tatleys, yes. They're doing some really interesting. You can get the whole, like, all the letters from the New York subway now.
I know, and you can also get the entire Tatley collection for like $250 or something, can't you?
Don't spoil your Christmas present. step two is let's decorate. This is where you can, you can put some arrows, a triangle, and some funny icons that have no way pertain to your business. Maybe
an axe
or a cigarette lighter or a lightning strike or a cog. Step three is some keywords. Now, this is where it gets really interesting. Mr. Bourdain, our mutual man crush, will be impressed by this. The use of the word artisanal.
Artisanal code, yeah.
Handcrafted code. Purveyors of fine artisanal handcrafted code.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that.
Dry goods, coding dry goods.
Yeah, not sure that one works so well. Step four is the extra info. In our world, what would we call that? Metadata.
Metadata, yeah.
So that's, what's MFG? I don't know what that stands for.
MFG, no idea.
My F goodness. Anyway, trademark established, country of origin, U dot, Synths, S dot, yeah. A dot. Step five, the name. Don't spend time searching through countless fonts. Just choose from the selection below. Wisdom Script, Futura Bold, of course. It's the Wes Anderson font, after all, or Brothers for that rugged pioneering look. Step six, and again, this is a business opportunity waiting to happen, is to turn it into a rubber stamp. Pick any color, as long as it's red or black. Grab some craft paper and stamp away. At which point you are the proud owner of your hipster logo, and you can kick back with your crafted, trendy, vintage-inspired artisanal logo, sup on a PBR and celebrate. It's genius.
And it is.
For only $15, if you are liable to forget that run-through there, you can buy the print. And it's only 7x10. That's too small. Oh, hold on. 19 inches by 28 for $40.
Blimey.
I'm tempted, you know.
Really? Where would you put it?
I don't know. In the office. No?
No.
No. But anyway, it made me laugh.
It made me laugh. Though I don't think we've ever topped Pack Love.
No, well, it's dog related. Obviously. I mean, what about your Fitbit for dogs? That was pretty good.
Yeah, I never bought that.
You didn't?
Tempting.
We did have those.
Aswitz is asleep on the bed at the moment. He's completely idle. I don't think. Don't think we need somebody to track how idle he is.
No, you can just visualize it.
You can just look at him.
Yeah. The Fitbit for dogs. No, it's probably hard to top that. Although we did have a couple of I was going to say requests. What's the opposite? People's suggestions the other week, which we need to revisit.
We do.
There was one was a bit sweary though, as I recall.
A lot of them are very sweary. Obviously, your rules on language are pretty, pretty comprehensive.
It's for the children listening.
It's for the kids, yeah.
You know, got to set a good example.
Of course.
Somewhere.
In life.
Yeah. But anyway, that's episode 11. Do check out the Hipster Logo Design Guide. And in no way, copy it. Although it's good advice.
I think
artisanal handcrafted code should be your strapline.
It will be from now on. I'll just change the website now.
Yeah. And, I don't think we can apologize enough. I think the only way we can make it up to Matt is to get another lunchbox somehow, by hook or by crook.
I think you're the man to do it.
I'm going to have to buy a plane ticket to Boston and go to the next event apart, sneak in, grab a lunchbox, sneak out all the way back home.
There you go.
If that's not dedication to the podcast, I don't know what is.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. And I love how we've just created ourselves a massive problem just through sheer negligence.
Sheer negligence, yes. these things happen. Next they time, we'll shall we ever run a competition again? Maybe not.
Not on the basis of that, no.
I don't think it's our strength.
No.
No. Anyways, as always, thank you for listening. Should you have any feedback or anything to say, then, Twitter is the way. Is the only way. Keep it to yourself. Shout it from the rooftops, or email in kia@backtofrontshow.com or on the Twitter, Back to Front Show. We'll be back again. We're trying to keep this more regular. with more discussion, more news, more stuff, more hipsters, more dogs. Anything else?
Bit of web.
Bit of web. But if you've made it this far, thanks again, and we shall be speaking with you soon. Cheers.
Cheers.